Support for this podcast comes from San Francisco International Airport. At SFO, you can discover award-winning flavors and unique shops all before takeoff. Learn more about what's at SFO at flysfo.com.
From KQED.
This is the California Report. Good morning. I'm Lily Jamali. A top health official in California's third largest county is urging hospitals to prepare for an onslaught of COVID-19 patients as intensive care units fill up statewide. Dr. Carl Schertz with Orange County's healthcare agency says ambulances have been waiting for hours to unload patients because emergency rooms are so backed up. But an official with the California Hospital Association said the biggest challenge facing hospitals right now is not enough staff, who themselves are dealing with shortages of personal protective equipment and testing supplies. Statewide, more than 57,000 healthcare workers in California have tested positive for COVID so far. Dr. Bob Wachter is the chair of the Department of Medicine at UCSF. He says if the healthcare workforce is hurt, the surge here will worsen.
As the communities are surging, healthcare workers are getting sick the same as everybody else. So if we don't have enough doctors and nurses, that's probably our critical shortage. There may be shortages of PPE in the beginning, as there were in the beginning, but that's not as critical as just making sure we have enough doctors and nurses and respiratory therapists and others to take care of you.
At least 221 healthcare workers have died of COVID-19 so far this year. That's according to the latest snapshot from state public health officials. Staffing issues are top of mind in San Diego, where the number of patients hospitalized for COVID has more than doubled from a month ago to 900. KPBS health reporter Taryn Mento says those hospitalization numbers are only expected to keep growing.
At least 600 more patients are expected in the next couple of weeks. Demetrios Alexio leads the Hospital Association of San Diego and Imperial Counties. He says hospitals can use emergency tents to add space, but they may also seek emergency relief from a state law that mandates certain nurse-to-patient ratios.
So there are some options as it relates to capacity, but again, I would still put it back on staffing that we need to figure out and continue to work at having adequate staff, whether it's the state helping us, whether it's flexing nurse staffing ratios.
But the California Nurses Association is not on board. The labor group's director of government relations, Stephanie Roberson, says operating outside the ratios can affect patient care and nurse safety.
We are opposed to it entirely. We don't think it should be happening. It is not only detrimental, obviously, first and foremost to the patients, but the nurses have to have the tools available to them to do their job safely and effectively.
Roberson says she's worried hospitals aren't first exhausting all other options, such as canceling elective surgeries. For the California Report, I'm Taryn Mento in San Diego.
All right. Well, back in 2016, voters in Los Angeles approved Proposition Triple H, a $1 billion measure to pay for thousands of new housing units for the homeless over a decade. But 4 years in, only a few hundred are done, and costs have skyrocketed. Why so little housing for so much money? Well, for the last several months, KCRW's Anna Scott has been looking at one project funded with a small slice of those funds. She found it's a sinkhole for public money that reveals some of the answers. Anna joins me now. Good morning to you. And Anna, remind us, what was Proposition Triple H supposed to do?
So this was a measure passed by LA voters back in 2016 to help the city build an additional 7,000 units of permanent supportive housing for people experiencing homelessness over 10 years. And 4 years in, only 333 HHH-funded units are open. The city says they are on track to meet their original goal, but it's been going really slow and the costs have been very high.
And you looked at one particular project, and what you found was pretty shady.
Yeah, so I looked into this one project here in Los Angeles that's a motel conversion. So it was an old 1960s motel that some affordable housing developers are turning into apartments for homeless veterans. And there was just a lot of money that was going into this project, more than $30 million already. It's not supposed to open until March. In fact, it may need even more money. And I wanted to know what was going on, so I followed the money. And I did find some really surprising things. You know, the two big things were, one, that the developers increased their budget on this project by buying this motel from the previous owners once for $22 million, and then on the same day, buying it again from themselves for $30 million. Nobody at the city has been able to explain this one-day $8 million price markup. The developers themselves haven't been able to explain it. But this is a lot of money tacked onto the budget of this affordable housing project that is using finite resources, including $10 million in Triple H funds to do this renovation. So, I think there's a very important question here of whether LA taxpayers are getting the most housing possible for what they're putting in. And, and also this is badly needed housing for the tens of thousands of people who are homeless in Los Angeles.
Yeah, that is really something. And thank you, by the way, for following the money there. What do you think your investigation shows about why affordable housing, as much as we talk about it, takes so long and is so expensive to build?
Well, so I want to say first that, look, what happened with this particular project, and there are a lot of details that the story goes into, and, this may be unusual in terms of its specifics, but it really speaks to the ways that affordable housing gets funded and how this measure, Proposition Triple H, was designed. Even under the best of circumstances, these projects are so complicated. Affordable housing developers have to put together money from public sources and private sources and so many different places. And the city here decided to plug Proposition Triple H into that system. So kind of made it just one more little slice of the pie. And you can see through this one project how, doing it that way, the city says, that's the way to create the most housing possible. But it also makes it really hard for the city to control the overall budgets for these projects and the overall timing. And you really see that in this case.
KCRW's Anna Scott. Anna, thank you.
Thank you so much.
We're going to go to the state capitol now, where some California lawmakers are calling on the governor and state health officials to place public school teachers and staff at the front of the line for vaccines so schools can reopen sooner. KQED's Kate Wolf has the story.
Officials in San Francisco and Los Angeles introduced resolutions last week asking for school workers to get priority in phase one of the vaccination rollout, right after health workers and seniors living in congregate settings. LA City Councilman Mike Bonin says getting teachers and staff vaccinated should get top consideration because parents and children are suffering as a result of distance learning.
The state of California, the entire country, frankly, has failed our kids. It is failing our children. It is failing families with children. And as a result, we are having waves of incredibly negative consequences.
Last week, state representatives from San Luis Obispo and Long Beach sent a letter to California's Health and Human Services Secretary asking for teachers to be put in the first tier for the vaccine. But not all officials agree. Gabriela Lopez, a member of the San Francisco School Board and a former teacher, says essential workers, like those in grocery stores, construction, and transit, should be prioritized.
I personally feel, given that they've been putting their bodies on the line every single day to maintain our city, they should get priority before our teachers do.
Governor Newsom has said the state will receive the first doses of the Pfizer vaccine next week. For the California Report, I'm Kate Wolf.
Officials in three counties on the Central Coast are pushing back against being lumped in with Southern California when it comes to state stay-at-home orders. With low COVID-19 case and death rates and high ICU bed availability, the counties say they're being penalized for their proximity to hot zones. From KCBX in San Luis Obispo, Greta Mart has more.
Public health and other officials in San Luis Obispo, Santa Barbara, and Ventura counties want to be designated a separate region, and they want only their metrics used to determine pandemic restrictions. Greg Hart is a Santa Barbara County supervisor.
We have consistently, done better in terms of disease transmission and hospitalizations than the rest of Southern California, and we think that it's fair and appropriate that is recognized.
Currently in San Luis Obispo County, over half of ICU beds are available. Dr. Penny Borenstein is public health officer.
We are still in very much better stead. I believe that we still have the ability to control our destiny, and we would like to do that.
Local business owners are pushing just as hard. All of the chambers of commerce in the region started a petition for independence of the SoCal region, garnering tens of thousands of signatures.
To my friends in the business community, we are really trying to support you. We are trying to limit the amount of time that you have to go through another arduous shutdown. We are trying to find a path forward with the state to have a reasonable approach to this for our county.
Borenstein announced she and her counterparts in Santa Barbara and Ventura counties are making their case to the state secretary of health. And the boards of all three counties unanimously signed a letter to the governor this week asking him to create a separate Central Coast region. For the California Report, I'm Greta Mart.
At this point, all 50 states have certified their election results, and Joe Biden has won the presidency. But Texas is asking the U.S. Supreme Court to invalidate the ballots of millions of voters in four swing states. Yesterday, 106 House Republicans signed on to an amicus brief with the court. One of them joins me on the show this morning. Congressman Doug LaMalfa represents the North State. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you. Good to be on with you.
You know, the suit alleges voter fraud, but what the courts have found again and again around this country as the president and allies have tried to make that case is that there's no evidence to support that. So let me begin by asking you, what evidence do you purport to have that there was fraud in last month's election?
Well, I'm not in those states or in those elections offices personally flipping through all these pieces of information. I get what I get from the news and the anecdotes and other things too. And all of this traces back to the issue of trying to have an untested, untried all-mail ballot, every ballot being sent in the mail in the states that have participated this way. So this amicus brief is intended to take a look at what is the constitutionality of changing a law in Pennsylvania that wasn't done by an act of the legislature with the governor's signature.
So a lot of doubt has been cast on that purported evidence. And, you know, frankly, the news sources that
there's
are
a lot of doubt
that
being cast on
promoting
on
that kind of false information are not credible sources of information.
Why aren't the questions being asked? Like, well, what is this information we're seeing out there? The media seems to want to have a question about, this is all false, all purported. They want to sweep it under the rug and get it over with. Like, well, there is no bum's rush to get all this done before either December 14th when the Electoral College meets or January 6th when those electoral votes are counted in the House of Representatives. And so,
first of all, the issue of mail ballots had a lot to do with the fact that we are in a pandemic. But many courts around the country have already weighed in, including judges who were appointed by President Trump. The conclusion that courts around this country have come to has been universal. And, the president hasn't been shy about implying that he hopes that the Supreme Court will essentially come to his rescue on this. Congressman, I appreciate your time.
It will rule. And we'll see what happens on that. But you have to remember the president has been under attack for four complete years by just about every entity on there. So no wonder he feels a little cornered on that. The 14th will be a benchmark, and then the January 6th will be a benchmark. So I'm patient enough to see what happens on those dates.
Congressman Doug LaMalfa, representing parts of the North State, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Good to be on with you.
And that's the California Report for this Friday, December 11th. We're a production of KQED Public Radio. Our engineers are Danny Bringer and Katie McMurrin, with assistance from Seal Muller. Our producers are Mary Franklin Harvin, Alice Wolfley, and Holly J. McDeed. And our senior editor is Angela Corral. I'm Lily Jamali. Have a great weekend.
Support for the California Report comes from Eric and Wendy Schmidt, whose philanthropy includes Schmidt Futures, focused on finding exceptional people and helping them do more for others together, on the web at schmidtfutures.com. The James Irvine Foundation, committed to a California where all low-income workers have the power to advance economically. Learn more at irvine.org. And Paint Care, now with 770 drop-off sites in California where households and businesses can recycle their leftover paint. More at paintcare.org.
Did you ever wonder what it's like to live alone, hidden in the woods, not speaking to a single soul for 30 years? Or wander the desert, uncover a hidden well, and dive to the bottom of the deepest water hole
for 2,000 miles. The Snap Judgment podcast takes you there with amazing stories told by the people who live them, with an original soundscape that drops you directly into their shoes. Snap Judgment. Listen and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Did you ever wonder what it's like to live alone, hidden in the woods, not speaking to a single soul for 30 years? Or wander the desert, uncover a hidden well, and dive to the bottom of the deepest water hole for 2,000 miles? The Snap Judgment podcast takes you there with amazing stories told by the people who live them, with an original soundscape that drops you directly into their shoes. Snap Judgment. Listen and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, I'm Sasha Coca, host of the California Report magazine. Every week, we bring you stories about what connects us in the giant, diverse Golden State. Because what happens in California changes the world.
I love this place. We were once seen as like the place to be, California. The land of milk and honey. That's where you go to Sunshine State. But we just have challenges right now.
KQED's California Report magazine. New episodes drop every Friday, wherever you get your podcasts.